You're in the home 6010.
Welcome to the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. We are presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways that you could save. It is Wednesday, October 19th, and history is being made on the show today. I'm Field Yates, and I am completely unimportant. Once again, I am footnote Yates for the day, as I have to my left Stefania Bell, and to her left, Liz Loza. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So there are multiple ways in which you're making history. One of them, I think, more important than the other. This is the first time, to my knowledge, that we have two Ivy Leaguers on the show at the same time. Princeton, Brown, very well represented by the Ivy League.
Yeah, poor Liz. My team crushed hers on Friday night.
I was waiting for it. I was like, I know this is the moment when Stefania's going to talk about the Tigers.
I don't want to gloat for too long, but
yeah,
I'm going to.
Well, here's the good news, Liz, is that while I'm very proud of my alma mater, Wesleyan, and we have had a great season once again, you guys could probably beat us. So not only are you superior to me intellectually, your football team is probably better than mine as well.
I don't know about our lacrosse team, though.
We'll save that till the spring.
Let me save that gloating for the spring. But beyond that, the more important thing is, I believe this is the first time, actually, I know it's the first time that we've had two out of three hosts of the Fantasy Focus be ladies, females in the house rocking it, and two trailblazers at that. This is an honor to be sitting next to both of you today. Thank you for allowing me to be a small part of this.
Wow, Field. I'm at a loss for words, which is rare.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did I do? I got you tongue-tied.
I know. Anyone who knows me. I know. I've been around, as people know, since the beginning of this
OG
podcast.
Yeah.
And we have never had two female co-hosts. So, Liz, you and I, Field's just window dressing. Am I right?
Well, what else is new? Story of my life.
Russell Wilson might say, let's ride, except let's do it better.
I was going to say, yeah, let's ride.
Let's not use the phrase. Russell Wilson does.
Well, gosh, but you look at this. You guys are so good and so talented that you were just leading me right into the first topic of the day, Liz, because the first topic of the day is Russell Wilson. So he's bad at football right now. We knew he was dealing with that lat strain, Stefania, but now it sounds like he's got not just an upper body issue, but a lower body issue.
And he already hasn't been running the ball that much or that well. Now he's got a hamstring injury to go with it. NFL Network reported that he was getting an MRI yesterday. As of now, considered day-to-day. This is a short week for them because they played on Monday night, and it's not even clear whether Russell Wilson is going to play. It sounds like he's going to try and play through it. This is what he's done. We know he's played through injuries in the past, an MCL sprain when he was in Seattle. He was dealing with, at that time, I think, with an ankle injury on the opposite side. He's played through the shoulder thing after getting an injection. I anticipate that he will try to play through this, but it's not like Russell Wilson needs something to further compromise his ability right now.
Yeah, no question about that. And once again, you have to make a decision now on Russell Wilson. Are you starting him on Sunday against a Jets defense that just neutralized Aaron Rodgers and all of a sudden is playing really well? It's a short week, as Stefania just referenced. The good news is they're playing at home, I guess, maybe. I don't know. I'm looking for silver linings here right now with Russell Wilson. Quarterback has been so bad this year. Like, that is the story maybe a fantasy football this season. It's just how upside down the quarterback spot is, other than like the five top guys who went 1 through 5 in drafts.
It's so bad that this week, because I have Russell Wilson in the War Room League, poor me, and my backup is Matt Ryan, who also has not been good, in case you weren't aware. And this week, I talked with Mike Clay, I blame him. Who do I put in, Russell Wilson or Matt Ryan? Guess who had the better fantasy week?
It wasn't Russell Wilson. Again, we'll talk about this in greater depth, certainly on Fantasy Football Now as well, but it's easy to say bench Russell Wilson. The second part of the equation is for who, Liz? And the answer is, like, no one's good right now. There are no good quarterbacks.
No, there are some interesting streamers this week that might be unexpected, and we'll touch to at the end of the show, I think. Yep. But I, too, have Russell Wilson in a league, and my co-manager texted me and was like, what are we doing? And I said, well, if you're Field, you're saying, who else do we have available? Because it's a topic we touched on yesterday's show.
And sometimes, like, some of the streamers we'll get to might be reasonable for this week.
Yeah.
But I'm not certain they're reasonable for next week. And with so many people experiencing quarterback problems, you can't just yourself be the only person to stream, because you're going to have competition on the waiver wire. It is a very, very, very tricky spot. We'll talk more about the quarterbacks later. Keenan Allen did not play on Monday night, Stefania. He had made a comment recently about eyes being on Seattle this Sunday. Do you believe his previous comments were accurate?
Yes, I think he was just telling the truth about where he was. His hamstring injury has been frustrating for him. He wanted to come back in week 4, had a setback during practice. That knocked him out a couple of additional weeks. Now he said the focus is on week 7. Seattle looked bright. They have a bye in week 8. So here's what's interesting. I think he'll ramp up in practice this week. Yep. I think we'll get that full week of practice. That's the only way for him to test it. And again, he has to get through that to be able to play. If he does play, the question will be the workload. You know, this is a guy who's been out since week 1. And I would be surprised if they put him back in and he's suddenly playing all of the snaps. I mean, this is, you want to see how his hamstring functions in a game situation. So I think it will be a good first test, and it's smart to do it heading into a bye week.
Yeah.
But I do think he'll play.
The matchup is just so good that mm-hmm. it's impossible. That
and he's valuable if he plays, you play him,
no question about that. But beyond that is that there are 4 teams on a bye this week, which includes some very, very, very talented wide receivers, right? Vikings, Rams, Eagles, and Bills. Like, you're talking about, what, 8 or 9 viable fantasy options on those 4 teams. So things are a bit more limited. You do have pivot points because they don't play, the Chargers don't play until 4:25. So you have some pivot options in the event that Keenan Allen is a surprise inactive. Before we get into some rankings talk, Stefania, you've been burning the candle at both ends of the wick or whatever the expression is. Is that the right
just
expression?
Both ends.
Burning the candle at both ends. Yeah. Again, they're the Ivy Leaguers. I'm not. All right, people? Burning the candle at both ends. That includes, like, last night you're doing Sirius XM radio until midnight.
I did. I was on with my friend Glenn Colton, Colton and the Wolfman. You can actually get it on demand on the Sirius XM app. So please go check it out. They do a movie theme every week on their show. And I got to choose the movie, and it was Bull Durham.
Ooh,
for
nice.
All of it. Just one of my all time favorites. We had a lot of fun with it. We had Mike Triplett on as a guest. So that was fun. And so fantasy advice and movie advice from us. It was a lot of fun.
And beyond that, Stefania, you also were at the league meetings. The NFL is conducting its owners' meetings in New York City this week. There have been lots of topics discussed, not the least of which is the latest on player safety, specific to not just quarterbacks and roughing the passer, but also the concussion protocol, which has been in some ways a defining story of the NFL's early season. What can you tell us about what you learned and where things might be heading?
Yeah, and talking about roughing the passer, that's basically not going to be a topic of theirs for discussion right now. And they elaborated on why, but I'll save that for a different time. I think everyone's aware. It's certainly being chatted about in a loose sense, but not being formally looked at right now. I was really there for the Health and Safety Committee's presentation. It was really focused on 2 things: preseason injury data, which they've now been able to take and analyze and look back at, and then what has happened since the implementation of the modifications to the concussion protocol. So starting with the preseason injury data, and I did tweet about this. If you want more detail, you can look at that. But just a couple of key points. One is that normally we see a spike in preseason lower extremity injuries, especially within the first 10 days. This has happens year in, year out. Players come together after time off. As they ramp up, they get injured. So in the interest of trying to mitigate the risk of injury, they had mandated acclimation periods, both in the first 4 days when players arrived at camp and then again after putting pads on. And what they found was that this year, during that normal spike window of the first 10 days, injuries were down 26% this year during that window. And in the entire preseason, injuries were 14% down, 16% specific to lower extremity. That's important because what they found is that for every club, 1 or 2 or 3 of the players injured in the preseason end up carrying that injury through the entire season. So if you can minimize the risk of injury in the early window, you're going to help that club in the end. The other aspect of the preseason injury data was the guardian caps. You guys may remember they look like the honeycomb things that they're wearing on the helmets to try and reduce impact. Thought this was a really interesting stat. Position groups mandated to wear the guardian caps during the preseason because that was not all groups. It was mostly players on the line, tight ends, I think quarterbacks as well. But the position groups mandated to wear the caps in the preseason had a 52% reduction in concussions in that window compared to the 3-year average. And those not mandated, there was no change in the incidence rate of concussions. So they're going to be looking at that data across the season to see what carries through. But initially, a very good result from that. The other element of what was addressed was the follow-up to the concussion protocol, which, of course, everybody's very interested in. And I think Dr. Sills, who's the chief medical officer of the NFL, put it very well, which is anytime you make a modification to a rule or you implement something new, there's an adjustment period. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing that. And so yes, he said, you are seeing people be more conservative and more cautious. Everyone sort of acknowledged that. They don't think that's a bad thing. But what they're really trying to get to is consistency. And so one of the things that was talked about was how that now, you know, they've always been able to call down from the booth and talk about, you know, make a recommendation to have a player examined for a head injury based on what they see in the booth.
Right.
He wanted to put to rest the notion that there is a single person making that call. There's five people in the booth, two athletic trainer spotters, two video techs, and a UNC, and that they have consensus before they make that call down to the field to the referee to have a player pulled for a head injury. So their focus is on trying to build consistency in how the rules are applied. Mm-hmm. He knows that, yes, people are being more conservative, more cautious, and his comment was, number one, they still need better diagnostic tools mm-hmm. to determine who has a concussion and also to determine return to play. And so that's something they're working on. But they would rather hold someone out who is not concussed than return to play someone who is.
Yep.
And that is the main takeaway. So work in progress, but positive. I think they feel like it's positive effort on both fronts.
Teddy Bridgewater would be a good example where there were some people that were up in arms by the fact that he did not seemingly have like forcible contact to the head against the Jets when he was pulled from the game before he recorded a single statistic. And yet, I think the NFL is going to say, well, if there was a 1% chance, it's better, especially with that team, given everything that took place with Tua just weeks before, for us to err on the side of caution. So great stuff there from Stefania. Be sure to check out Stefania_ESPN on Twitter for all of her notes from the league meetings. And let's turn that into rankings conversations. And Liz, the player at the center, at least most of the conversation surrounding the concussion protocol is Tua Tagovailoa from the Miami Dolphins. And the theme this week for our ranks is just players that interest us, players that are tough, not tough, interesting, not interesting, hopefully more interesting than not interesting. But let's begin with Tua, because what's going through your mind as you're calculating your quarterback rankings?
Well, when Kyle, our researcher, Guy Friday, do-it-all wunderkind, asked us, you know, who are some players that you're having trouble ranking? And Tua came immediately to mind. Obviously, the concussion issue is part of it. The fact that he's making his return from such a widely discussed injury that happened on primetime, in primetime again, and on the heels of the league meeting that Stefania attended, there's a lot here, right? This isn't just like, oh, he's returning from a knee injury, and we all know what knee injuries are. Brain injuries are, certainly the brain itself is like more complex than I would imagine a knee or an ankle. So part of me is like, okay, well, what level is Tua going to be at? And where's his anxiety level? That's got to be part of it. And he's on prime time. So now there are like brighter lights. We also know that now the football piece of this, like walking into last week, we're like, oh, Tom Brady's going to flame the Steelers. They right, have no secondary. Everybody that. Well, last week the theme was all upsets, right? But Pittsburgh held Brady to under 250 yards and one passing touchdown on 40 attempts with both Mike Evans and Chris Godwin in the lineup.
Sure.
So now we've got the concussion issue. We've got the visibility and discussion of concussion issue. We've got potential rust or cobwebs. I don't know if that's an appropriate thing to say, but that's
well, I will say this about Tua, which is that he, in addition to being cleared through the normal processes, through the team, the independent person that when a player has a concussion, in addition to being cleared by the team physician, they have to be cleared by an independent neurological consultant. Mm-hmm. Tua also sought outside specialists, four of them. One of them was at University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, where they have the premier sports concussion program in the country. So I think we can all feel very good about Tua's clearance, because that it was so much more extensive than what typically happens, that I think everyone feels good about it. Number two, he's been out and participating in practice. Like, this isn't the first week. This is the first week where he's really been getting ready to take the helm. And the other thing is just to his personality and his persona, I think he'll be fine. Like, I don't think the bright lights, the rust, I think is potentially legit because he hasn't played football in a few weeks and getting back. You know how it is. It's a rhythm thing. And then you get out of that, especially with the injury that he's gone through. But I don't think the stage will bother him.
Well, prior to the injury, he was top 10 in nearly every efficiency metric that we look at, accuracy, completion percentage, deep ball completion percentage, even though people are going to talk about that one, right? Also top six in both clean pocket accuracy rating and under pressure accuracy rating. So are we going to get, you know, that Tua with two healthy speedsters on both sides against a vulnerable Pittsburgh Steelers secondary, especially in a week when we're not having Josh Allen and we're not having Kirk Cousins. We don't have Jalen Hurts. We've got Russell Wilson questions. We've got Tom Brady questions. Tua could be a top seven quarterback.
I've got him ranked as quarterback seven this week, so I'm right there where you are, Liz, as well. Here's a question from the chat. This comes from Joe, who wants to know, for the rest of the season, Tua or Kyler Murray? It's Kyler Murray, and you're going to have some, at least for me, it's Kyler Murray, and there's going to be some frustrating moments. The Cardinals offense, as has been the conversation in many NFL circles this week, is a mess. It helps to get DeAndre Hopkins back, no doubt. It hurts to not have Hollywood Brown, also no doubt, but perhaps Robbie Anderson can show some signs of life there. But Kyler has more avenues to get fantasy points than does Tua Tagovailoa. Obviously, his legs is a big part of Kyler Murray's value. Tua has zero value with his legs, at least so far this season. The Arizona Cardinals are going to play more games from behind. They have been leading on just 2% of their snaps this year. That's the lowest in the NFL. Garbage time is in play for Kyler. Having to play from behind is very much in play for Kyler. And while I am optimistic about Tua for this week, he's played three full games this year. He's had one good fantasy game. So two ho-hum games, one very good game. One very good quarter, really. So for fantasy, Tua is going to have to slice and dice like Tom Brady or Joe Burrow or Aaron Rodgers or Matthew Stafford, guys who have zero value with their legs. I just think Kyler has a much higher floor for that reason.
He's the QB6 overall, Kyler Murray. He's averaging 19 fantasy points per game. I'm not complaining.
But it's fine. Yes. Like, it may not be pretty. It's been pretty ugly, as a matter of fact. But it's fine for fantasy in a year in which quarterbacks have not been fine. The first player that I wanted to discuss is Aaron Rodgers. And if you're out there and you have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, I think you've probably already turned into a different direction, or you've just cut bait entirely. I have Aaron Rodgers as quarterback 17 this week. Keep in mind, as Liz just mentioned, no Josh Allen. We have no Kirk Cousins. We have no Jalen Hurts this week. We've got quarterbacks that are banged up like Russell Wilson. We've got quarterbacks that are struggling like Matthew Stafford. Oh, he's out. He's out this week, so put him out of the window. But anyways, the point is that I've got Aaron Rodgers at quarterback 17 when we've already got a ton of quarterback question marks. But here's the problem. Just watch Aaron Rodgers in this Packers offense. He is averaging his lowest or his fewest yards per attempt since 2015. Yes, Alan Lazard keeps finding the end zone. They do not have a difference maker, though, amongst their wide receivers. Their offensive line has struggled much more than I would have expected it to. The running game hasn't been great as well. There's all this rhetoric and jargon from the Packers coming out right now. We got to simplify things. We got to find our identity. Those are just nice, fancy ways of trying to avoid the fact that the offense is a disaster right now. The matchup is really good. Yeah. The Commanders stink on defense. All right. They just stink. They've had some absolute, just like, they played fine last week against Liz's Bears. Sorry, that might be more with the Bears, Liz. But they've had some moments where they have been roasted so far this season. Jalen Hurts carved him up. Jared Goff had four passing touchdowns. So, yes, I understand there is some vulnerability there, and probably stink is too strong of a characterization of this Commanders defense. They can be had. Let me say, this is not the Broncos defense as an example, but I'm just having the hardest time getting confident in Aaron Rodgers specific to this week because I keep saying the answer is not probably coming from the outside. It's probably coming from the inside, at least for this week specifically. And that's asking a lot for a receiving group that's not going to have Randall Cobb this week. We'll see on Christian Watson. We'll see on Sammy Watkins. Like, all of a sudden we're asking Romeo Doubs and Alan Lazard and Bob Tonyan to become difference makers. That to me feels far-fetched right now. I've got him six spots lower than ESPN consensus. Are you more confident, Liz?
As you were speaking, I was like, I'm really impressed that you had the onions, frankly, to put him down into 17, because I didn't. He's my QB 11, just inside of the top 12. Not for any of the reasons you didn't mention, right? I'm with you 100%. The matchup coming off such another big loss. Like, also, all this good New York football, what's going on?
Whole state.
Drop it to the Giants. Drop one to the Jets. I just can't imagine that even in a scenario where game script will theoretically work out well for the backfield, that Aaron Rodgers won't still want to push a little bit. There is an ego there. I think you're 100% right. And if you don't need to start Aaron Rodgers, don't start him. But because of the matchup, I do have him inside my top 12.
Stefania, who's the player that comes to mind for you first? It was a difficult or interesting ranking conversation.
It's Kyle Pitts. We haven't talked about him enough on this
who's
show.
That guy? Yeah.
I know. Well, actually, you know what? We're starting to discover who he is because we finally got him in the end zone this week, which I won't tell the world what Field's reaction was in the war room when Kyle Pitts got into the end zone. But let's just say.
Jubilant.
Yeah. I think you deserve the credit because you've been manifesting this for a while. But here's the thing is, for me, it's like, is this the beginning of an upward trend or is this an aberration? We hope it's the beginning of an upward trend for Kyle Pitts, but because he's been so underutilized, 18.6 routes per game, 24th at the position in the NFL. And if you look at the routes run, he actually ran a lot more routes in the first couple weeks of the season, and then it dropped off significantly. But when it dropped off, the percentage of times he was targeted while running routes went up. So at least there was some more efficiency in terms of potentially being a pass catcher on those routes. I've got an idea. Let's have him run a lot of routes and then get targeted a lot on all those routes that he can run because he's such a weapon for them offensively. I hope that this is the beginning of a trend. Yeah. People have performed well at the tight end position against the Bengals. We've seen it with Mark Andrews, Conklin, Pat Freiermuth. They've all had good games against the Bengals. I think it's possible here. Let's just keep this going, can we, with Kyle Pitts? Because we've talked about the wasteland that is the tight end position, and here we've got this supreme talent. And look at who they're playing. So they got the Bengals, then they got Carolina, then they got the Chargers, and then they got Carolina again, then they got the Bears. Sorry, Liz, and then Washington. Come on, these should be good games for Kyle Pitts.
Honestly, that schedule actually makes me nervous, not confident.
I haven't seen it from the Chargers.
Because of the rushing volume?
No, the reason it makes me nervous because so the Falcons are the only team that's undefeated against the spread this season. They're 6-0.
Yep.
So if you're Arthur Smith, and I'm writing about this in Field Pass this week, is that what we want in fantasy does not jive with what he wants in real life.
He has said that exact thing, in fact. And so he's not here to win fantasy football.
Right, and it seems like that tracks. 18 routes per game for Kyle Pitts over the past 3 weeks. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if this formula is good enough for them to be 3-3 so far, Marcus Mariota has 34 completions over the past three games. I'm with you. But that's the reason why I have Kyle Pitts at tight end 9 this week as opposed to tight end 3.
Right. Yep. Well, we need to see more of it. But I do believe the fact that he's being targeted more heavily on the routes that he's running means that they're looking to him to make the play. So if you just boost that a little bit, I think, again, you know, the Chargers defense has been weakened by injuries across the board. So that doesn't scare me. Carolina, I don't even really know what to make of them at this point. That doesn't scare me. And then the Bears don't. Washington definitely.
I'm hopeful. I've got my fingers crossed here. I'm hopeful but nervous if that's possible.
Oh yeah,
what's that? Legit. Cognitive dissonance. Is that what that is? That's a big.
Well, there's
Ivy
only
League
been
term, right?
1 week where it's looked like they've really involved him
against Seattle.
So
Seattle
I understand
too.
Being nervous.
It's a very soft matchup, you know.
All right, Liz, let's move things forward here. Another player that's been, well, down this year, but we know is super talented is Terry McLaurin.
And this is the thing. I, again, appreciate you have him outside of the top 30. I can't bear to put him outside of my top 25. It's Terry McLaurin. Yeah. Talent breaks tiebreakers. It is a mantra I have in fantasy football. And, you know, this season with Wentz, he's been targeted on 15.4% of routes. And then last year with Taylor Heineke, he was targeted on 24.7% of routes. What's the asterisk there? Well, there are more mouths to feed now in Washington than there were last year. I am hoping for a little bit of a Heineke magic. I'm hopeful that maybe there's not as much tape available or that the preparing for Heineke is a little bit different of a process. Also, against Green Bay, receivers have regularly gone over 12 fantasy points. That's not a great number for Terry McLaurin. I am a little bit worried about Jaire Alexander, who I imagine. Also, McLaurin is definitely drawn significant coverage. But Alexander's only allowed 11 receptions so far on the season. Again, however, and this is maybe it's a take lock, probably Field is being more objective about his ranks than I am. The talent is too great. I can't imagine there not being at least one or two highlight-worthy plays per week. And you shouldn't chase those. But again, we've got four teams and all of these wide receivers on bye. So I'm going to prioritize them and hope the fish.
Like an odd number of players on my War Room League team that we're discussing in these conversations, which tells you just about how good my War Room team is
better
this season.
Mine.
But I'm with you, Liz. Like, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that there's some Heineke magic there. He felt a little bit more aggressive and risk-taking last year than we've seen so far from Carson Wentz. He played 16 games. Terry McLaurin had over 1,000 yards last year. Let's hope things turn around. Next player for me is basically any Broncos running back. Like, good luck. So Melvin Gordon's the most talented of the three, right? Mike Boone had one carry last week. It does not feel like it's going to be Mike Boone. He's better, Melvin Gordon is, than Latavius Murray. Latavius Murray had 15 carries this past week. Latavius Murray, who had no job, he and I were both equally employed by NFL teams 1 month ago. He was out of the league, and now he has 15 carries. And on Monday, Melvin Gordon had 3 carries for 8 yards. Here's what head coach Nathaniel Hackett said about it after the game. Maybe it was yesterday. Quote, Melvin didn't do anything wrong. Read into that what you'd like, but it could mean that, hey, we just think that Latavius Murray is a better option than Melvin Gordon. I've put every Broncos running back outside the top 34 this week. Gordon is 32 for me. That's as high as I'm willing to go on him. I don't know how you feel confident playing any of them.
You know what else he said? He did say yesterday Melvin didn't do anything wrong. After the game, he said, no injury that I'm aware of. Because if you don't, everybody was talking. The broadcast booth was talking about it being like they must have benched him. They must have benched him because they were looking at body language. Melvin Gordon looked frustrated. He came into the game with a neck and a rib issue. And so it was a question. Was this injury related? Was it performance related? We know he's had the fumble issue. If the head coach can't answer it, then there's even a bigger problem than, you know, it is a mess.
Also, how good must Latavius Murray be in a room? Like, he just gets added. He's the vet ad time and time again. That kid must have so much charm.
And the thing is, he didn't look great last year for Baltimore, and he looked good on Monday night, good enough for Denver. So maybe Latavius Murray takes this job. My sense is that Melvin Gordon needs to be playing more. This is a team that is looking for answers desperately on offense right now. They've averaged 1.2 offensive touchdowns so far this season, worst in the NFL. I'm hoping that I am way off on Melvin Gordon.
Let me ask you this. Would it surprise you if Melvin Gordon... No, I was just going to say if Melvin Gordon suddenly is like the guy in the next game.
Nothing would surprise me.
Do you believe it too? Do you not think it was purposely instructive? There is a part of me that's like, this is some lesson teaching something or other.
I don't know.
I don't even know. That's the thing. If I had confidence that the coach was deliberately doing that, that would be one thing. But it almost was like he wasn't really fully aware.
He's not a kid. Like, this is not like this is Melvin Gordon's third year in the league. And he's got to like,
but also it's not like Nathaniel Hackett didn't grow up around the game.
I don't know what's going on here. Like, maybe, and I've said this many times on the show, there's no position that coaches value different things more than we do in fantasy football than running backs, right? Whether it's Latavius Murray is more decisive, is hitting the holes more appropriately, whether he's faster than Melvin Gordon, he's not, whether he's more explosive, more agile. No, he's not either of those things. Pass protection, you name it. The things that he's asking him to do, he's doing at a higher level, at least did so on Monday night. If you're starting a Broncos running back, good luck. Let's get to our IBM Watson Insight of the Week, informed by IBM. We're talking hot commodities. The top two players requested in trades over the past 2 weeks are, well, this one's no surprise, Ja'Marr Chase. This one is Najee Harris. People trying to offload Najee. Let's start with Najee Harris. And again, four teams on a bye. Keep that in mind. Najee Harris is my running back 20 for this week. Liz, you and I are identical in having him at running back 20. A couple spots below our ESPN consensus ranks. So I suppose the saving grace for Najee is that he found the end zone last week, got a little bit of passing game utilization, including that touchdown catch from Kenny Pickett. And if the offense prior to Kenny Pickett going down did look a little bit better than it had with Mitch Trubisky. Mike Tomlin yesterday said, if Kenny Pickett clears concussion protocol, he's starting on Sunday night. But the player that I thought was one of the safest running back valuations in the preseason process looks like his ceiling is very, very much capped, and it's nowhere close to what we thought it was going to be this year.
I think it's the passing game utilization, right? And I would also go so far as to say that last week was probably much of an aberration on both sides of the ball for Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Especially in that matchup. Sure. So I don't think we can use that as like sound data. It is data and it cannot just be washed away or not delved into. But I do think that it was not, it was anomalistic. And so if I'm looking at the whole of the season for Najee Harris, he's only cleared 3 receptions once, and that was back in week 2.
Yeah.
And that's what
led all running
concerned.
Backs and catches last year. Yeah. 93 targets last year for Najee Harris, 77 catches. Like, that's like some Austin Eckler, Christian McCaffrey light stuff right there.
But it also felt like Ben, he was looking for him. Like, yep. That was his go-to. That was the mechanism. That was how they ran that offense. Was like, who is the outlet? It's always Najee.
Yep. And not so much this year. So tough days right now for Najee Harris that play the Dolphins on Sunday night. This one's fun. Let's talk about something fun here. Jamar Chase, who's all the way back up to wide receiver 2 in our rankings. Again, accounting for the fact that there is no Cooper Kupp this week. There is no Justin Jefferson this week. So maybe he'd be a couple spots lower. But coming off of a wonderful game, 32.2 fantasy points against the Saints. And here's where I think it gets good. Is that this could be the start of a potential like few game, like a mini red hot stretch for Jamar Chase.
I think Joe Burrow should get his jersey and put it on before every game. Every game.
But here's the good news. Beyond that jersey, they play the Falcons this week. Yeah. And the Falcons just lost Casey Hayward to IR. Coming into the season, you would have thought that perimeter corner is one of the strengths of this roster. They play gutty defense. That's part of the reason why the offense can play such a slow pace. But I think Jamar Chase has a day on Sunday, which I know that's not exactly going out on a limb. But prior to Sunday's explosion against the Saints, he had under 13 fantasy points in 4 straight games, right? So I think we're going to see more of the Jamar Chase from 2021 version on Sunday. And after Atlanta, at Cleveland, home to the Panthers, a bye, and then at Pittsburgh again, like, I don't know. I'd be very trepidatious before I would move off of Jamar Chase now in a trade. The two players requested in trades most often were Jamar Chase and Najee Harris. So people are trying to acquire Jamar Chase right now.
2 tutties, no Marshawn Lattimore. Makes sense. Yeah. AJ Terrell. Oh, he is allowing a passer rating of nearly 130.
Yeah, which
CB80.
He's an amazing player. Like, he was an all-pro level guy last year. And this year, he's just been a shell of himself. It's been really, really surprising.
He has Kyle Pitts on his fantasy team.
We're going to come back and talk about some players that have potential starting value, but we're not entirely sure. Before we do that, though, Liz, can you tell us about Geico?
I would love to. How would you love a chance to save some money on insurance?
I would love that as well.
Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help, like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
A+ live read. Welcome to a new age of business powered by creativity. And IBM is helping make it happen by creating experiences your customers actually want to experience. ESPN's fantasy app uses AI from IBM to analyze scores, stats, and millions of data points, uncovering insights so fans can make smarter decisions and optimize their fantasy league-winning outcomes. What creates up with it changes everything. IBM. Let's create. Learn more at IBM.com/fantasy football. We're back. The game we're playing is called Fool Me Once, the starter edition. And let's begin with some players that we have who have been good at times this season, other times not so much. Jeff Wilson, who faces the Chiefs on Sunday. And Stefania, how confident are you feeling in Jeff Wilson, who last week was very limited because he fumbled early, had just 0.5 fantasy points? Is he going to be in the doghouse this week?
I hope not.
I don't think so.
I think they'll move off of that. This was such a weird game for the 49ers, and they end up going pass heavy, and then it was messy. There were a couple drops, and it felt like a sort of panicky game for them. So I don't think it was normal game script. And I think that Jeff Wilson's still Jeff Wilson until Elijah Mitchell comes back.
All right. Which probably is still, if my math, like another month or so away.
It may not be that far away, but.
But yeah, so we'll call it 2 to 4 weeks, somewhere in that range. I've got him at running back 22. I just think, like, if the 49ers are going to win on Sunday against the Chiefs, they're going to do it by playing 49er football, not by trying to play Chiefs football. And that is controlling the game on offense, on the ground.
Correct.
And finding a way defensively, even with all their injuries, to neutralize the Chiefs a little bit. And I think Jeff Wilson has to be a big part of that. Any disagreement there?
No, they've seen this matchup before.
They have. Yeah, they may have played in the Super Bowl that one time. Let's move forward to Baltimore. And Stefania.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Sorry. J.K. Dobbins his knee tightened on Sunday. It's Wednesday morning, so we haven't had any practice updates, but layman's terms, is knee tightening scary as much as it scares me?
And you warned against this.
Yeah.
At the top of the season.
To me, I'm like, yep, this is what happens. Yeah. We knew that he had a difficult injury, a complex knee injury, ACL, LCL, hamstring, meniscus, all of that stuff involved in his surgical repair was part of the reason it was so difficult to get back. And part of the reason that Baltimore was insistent on ramping him up, because it's not just what you can do when you get on the field, it's how you recover the next day. And John Harbaugh said later he thought maybe it was the turf that contributed to it. Your knee is that much more sensitive to everything, including field surface, including shoes, including just everything. Remember, it was just 2 weeks ago when he was actually being complimented for breaking three tackles in one run, mm-hmm. and that they were seeing like hints of the old J.K. Dobbins. Well, that has a physical toll, and he's still not there yet. Next year, I think this will be well past him. This, to me, is not unexpected, but it reminds you that you can't necessarily count on like this consistent linear upward trend for him, that it's more likely to be up and down.
Oftentimes, I'll say, like, this player is this until further notice, and I realize that what I should be saying is this player will be ranked as this until further notice in my rankings, and J.K. Dobbins will be ranked as a low-end flex consideration until proven otherwise, because I believe right now he needs a touchdown to pay off. He's averaging just 10.3 touches per game in the four games that he has played. He does not have 45 rushing yards in a game this season. He's a minimal factor in the passing game for the most part. A very talented guy, but obviously still restricted because of that knee injury. I think if you're playing him, you are hoping he finds the end zone, perhaps twice. Other side of this game is Kareem Hunt, who all the way back in week one was so good. He had those, 23 fantasy points back in week one? Last week he had 1.2 fantasy points. Liz, if you are making the case for Kareem Hunt, how would you make it this week?
I would say that Kareem Hunt's floor outside of that week one game is about 60 scrimmage yards and 2 to 3 catches.
Okay.
That's what you're getting. And he's been pretty consistent in terms of that output, save last week. Mm-hmm. I would also say that, again, game script went a little out of the ordinary for Cleveland last week, right? Wasn't what they wanted to do. I think he's going to, you know, that this is what you're going to get. So is Kareem Hunt, he's no longer a, you know, there was a time when both he and Chubb could produce top 20, 24 numbers.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. I think Kareem Hunt's like a floor play at your flex, maybe a low-end RB2, but probably in that 30th range.
What was surprising to me.
Zero catches.
Yeah, last week when they were getting, I mean, they were, it wasn't a blowout from start to finish, but by the second half, like they were down pretty big. And you'd think, like, oh, they're down big. That means less Nick Chubb, more Kareem Hunt. Yep. And yet he had one target last week. That was just weird.
I think that was just weird. And I also think the bounce back is this week, because Baltimore has allowed the third most receptions to opposing running backs. And we know that if we look at the overwhelming data, mm-hmm. Hunt is going to be used that way. And if there's a matchup that suggests it's important for the other team to use him that way, or it would help the other team to use him that way, then I think he will be utilized.
So I think my feeling is that if you're trusting Kareem Hunt this week, you might also believe that the Browns defense just can't hold up against this Ravens offense. And the Browns defense is struggling right now pretty significantly. I've got him as running back 28. I do feel a little bit nervous about that ranking because of the low utilization this past week, but talented guy, and maybe the Browns, who themselves are kind of at a crossroads right now, are facing the same issues the Packers are facing. Like, let's look in the mirror, decide what we do best, and highlight that, accentuate that as much as we can. Quarterback struggling right now. Let's get the football in the hands of 24 and 27. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, probably two of our four best offensive players, you would think, right now. That's, I think, the case for Kareem Hunt, but they do make me a little bit nervous. DK Metcalf had been really good for three straight games, and now we're halfway through the season, and he's got three really good ones and three not-so-good ones. Where are we at this week with him against the Chargers, Liz?
It's going to be hard to sit in because the ceiling is so high. This is something you talked about heading into the season. This is the DK experience. You're going to have boom games. You're going to have bust games. And when it booms, it's going to feel so good. And when it busts, it's going to hurt real bad.
And the matchup is a pretty good one here. I know that the Chargers held the Broncos offense in check last week, but that's what everybody does. So it's really not that big of a deal. And Remember J.C. Jackson signed all that money this offseason?
Yeah, he's not been what right. Happened, well, he's like had that ankle issue, yeah. And it's been a problem. I don't think he's right.
Yeah, no, it certainly seems that way. He's been one of the...
Because it's not like his talent suddenly went out the window.
Yeah, there was talk, and you know, Ryan Clark was talking about this on NFL Live on Tuesday about how, like, you know, you signed a player who had been so good in a particular kind of scheme, and now you're asking him to do very little of what he used to do and a whole lot of what he's not accustomed to doing. Multiply that by the ankle, and all of a sudden this secondary is not nearly as imposing as it was. I've got DK as wide receiver 7 this week. I do think Seattle's passing offense gets going again, in part because they're probably going to have to. Last week, their defense played well enough against Arizona. I think Justin Herbert will be more successful this week than he was this past week. And of course, DK Metcalf's running mate is Tyler Lockett, who has had 2 duds and 4 really good games. So I don't know that it's that dissimilar, right? Like, maybe, I'm not sure. Do we think DK definitely has more weekly upside? Or do we think they just have, like, they both have lots of upside? They both have the potential downside. That's about as far as we can go here with these Seahawks, right?
Well, I think one is a volume play, right? Okay. And the other is a touchdown play, like a giant highlight worthy play, right? Out of DK, you're not going to get that.
Get a touchdown. Yeah, that's DK.
Yeah, but I would say, and I agree with what you guys were saying, I would just also say, like, if you're out there and you're trying to decide on Tyler Lockett, like, especially in a week with 4 teams on a bye, in a good matchup, like, you know what you're signing up for, right? I hate that I have been using this categorization as much as I have, but there are just these players that... You can throw away the matchup, you can throw away what happened the week or weeks before, and you just know that Tyler Lockett could score 20 on Sunday, and it wouldn't surprise me. He could also score 5 on Sunday, and it would probably surprise me more, but it is certainly possible, which is why all of us have Tyler Lockett ranked inside our top 20 for wide receivers. Let's get to the fool me once, but this on the other side of things, guys, maybe have been benched. I think there are 2 ways to look at Brian Robinson's performance last Thursday night. First of all, most importantly, before we get to the 2 ways, is it like it's an amazing story? The kid's resilience is off the charts. His toughness is just incalculable. It's amazing, right? He had ended up with 12 fantasy points, Liz. Would you say you were more encouraged or discouraged by what you saw? Encouraged by Brian Robinson or discouraged by the fact that it's still a 3-man weave in that backfield?
I think it's that. I don't know if it's Brian Robinson got the touchdown. So he got the flash, he got the big play, he got the 6 points. I don't know, however, if I'm on Brian Robinson so much as being off of this backfield. Mm. There's clearly a reluctance to play Antonio Gibson in any sort of regular way or to harken back to his college roots with a large passing game role, especially with J.D. McKissic as part of this team. Although that last year waned in weird ways as well. So I think it's interesting to see Brian Robinson be utilized. I'm not quite sure any of these guys are going to see a significant role to make them very fantasy relevant unless one of them were to be out or injured. We saw Antonio Gibson at the top of the season obviously smash without Brian Robinson in the lineup. That's kind of where I'm at.
And I know, and I'm willing to concede that yes, his role grew from the first game of the season for him to the second game of the season. I just don't know, and maybe there are people out there that feel differently. I don't know that it ever grows to the point where he has the job unto himself that he and Antonio Gibson are currently sharing, or he's going to get passing. He has 0 catches through 2 games, 26 rushes for 82 yards. So an inefficient runner, 82 yards on 26 carries is 3.2 yards per carry with basically no passing game utilization. I think he is... Again, like a flex play that needs to find the end zone to pay off. It's different than J.K. Dobbins, but similar range in terms of where I have them ranked. Stefania, last week you talked about how the 49ers kept throwing the football and it was very un-San Francisco-like. It benefited those that played Brandon Ayuk. You have talked about, like, when Jimmy's under center, Brandon Ayuk seems to be a much more effective fantasy player. And it's going to be Jimmy again for the rest of the season. What do you think here on Sunday against the Chiefs?
It's really interesting. Obviously, he had his most productive fantasy day, you know, so far this season. 8 of 11, 83 yards, 2 touchdowns. 2 touchdowns. I mean, awesome. San Francisco could barely score, but he gets 2 touchdowns, 28.3 fantasy points. Both of his touchdowns were in the second quarter, though, and he was never in the end zone again. The offense was not functioning well. He only had one touchdown in his first five games, so you think, well, that performance was encouraging. But then you look at sort of what happened. The 49ers were a mess up front. They haven't had Trent Williams. They've lost a couple other guys to injury. Trent Williams could be back this week. Yeah, he's trying to come back after three games and originally projected for four. If Jimmy gets a little more time, I think that that is going to help with their entire passing game. He was off target a little bit, but he also had two passes that were dropped. So it's hard to judge their whole passing game on what happened in the second half against Atlanta. Don't forget that last year, remember Brandon Ayuk had a rough start. He and Kyle Shanahan were a bit at odds, and he was essentially benched even when he wasn't for, you know, like he had to prove it. It was a prove it situation for him. Well, he did in the second half of the season. He comes back in the last eight games. Week eight forward, he played at least 88% of the snaps. And then Debo was hurt. And that's when he and Jimmy really started to form that connection and that bridge. And so I think this is getting him back on track and more involved in the offense. I'm a little concerned about what happens with the Chiefs other than I think two things happen, Field. Kyle Shanahan's goal always seems to be get a first drive and get it going quickly and get on the board and then clock control, like ground, which is why we like Jeff Wilson. But they may find themselves in a situation against Kansas City, 49ers secondary is banged up, where they're going to have to catch up. And I think Brandon Ayuk is showing himself to be a pretty reliable threat there.
Yeah, it's almost like if you're playing daily fantasy, you may not want to have Brandon Ayuk and Jeff Wilson in the lineup because they need different things to go right in order for them to probably pay off. But if the Chiefs do have a bigger lead in this game, then Ayuk should be a very, very busy man. Let's wrap things up quickly with Mike Gesicki. And if you're wondering, hey, he had a monster game last week. He was actually the highest scoring tight end in fantasy last week. He had six catches. He had 69 yards. He had a pair of touchdowns. He hit the gritty again. He will never do it again, he says. I love it.
Oh, God. That'll be good news for all of us.
Why is he ranked so low? The answer is because, unfortunately, he has two games this season with more than 30 receiving yards. In the 3 weeks prior to last week, Mike Gesicki had five fantasy points or fewer in each of them. It's a roll of the dice position if you don't have one of a handful of guys, and Mike Gesicki is very much a part of that. I just want him to do well because I actually think his gritty is pretty funny and good. Disagreement. Seems like, okay, silence often speaks volumes.
Yeah. I don't need to see it again. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'm okay. I think a lot of people feel that way. Jamar Chase certainly feels that way as he took to Twitter to say exactly that. We're going to come back and wrap things up with some social questions and our Little Caesars football preview. Stefania, first a word from you.
Yes. You know, Field, it's the most wonderful time of year that's upon us again. It's college football season. Dr. Pepper and the residents of Fansville invite you to revel in another one-of-a-kind year of flexing your foam finger, humming your school's fight song in your sleep, and thriving on a steady diet of buffalo chicken dip and post-game day commentary. All washed down with a rich, delicious Dr. Pepper, of course. Another Saturday is always just around the corner, so make sure your tailgate doesn't turn into a failgate and pick up a case of ice-cold Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve.
Your kicker's lining up for an onside kick. The chances of regaining possession are slim. The stakes are high and the tension is higher. Your pulse, it's racing. He kicks and you watch as the ball lands. Make every play feel this exciting with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, and their unbeatable offers. Right now, new customers can make any $5 NFL bet and get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Check this out. In addition to the usual bets, everyone can boost their winnings with DraftKings stepped-up same-game parlays. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FFF to get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Just place a $5 bet on any football game only at DraftKings Sportsbook using code FFF. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. 21 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Tennessee, call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text 467-369. Bonus issued as free bets. One early win token issued at opt-in. Moneyline bets only. Deposit and wagering restrictions apply. Eligibility and terms at DraftKings.com/ football terms. That's a hard, that was like, that was Ivy, that was, like, that was Ivy League.
That was, right there. That, yeah.
That was the closest, that was like me trying to read Stefania's Latin textbook.
Yeah, back in the day. Latin.
Vini Vidi Vici,
man,
right?
You are dating me.
I took Latin back in the day too.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. It was required.
That's why you have such good vocabulary. Yeah. You know that? Yeah.
People say it's an important language, right? It is a dead language, but it is. Yeah.
The root language.
I know a couple other things. let's get to some social questions. The first one comes from Jacob Marmolejo. Who is the best running back stash out of Kyren Williams, Latavius Murray, Kenyon Drake, and Deion Jackson? Let's go around the room here. I have a very clear-cut answer. We'll go left to right. Liz, who do you like?
Kyren Williams for me.
Stefania?
Kyren Williams.
Yeah, it's clearly Kyren Williams.
It's Kyren Williams. He has the easiest path. Jonathan Taylor's probably coming back. I love Deion Jackson, but I expect Jonathan Taylor back. We've already talked about Latavius Murray and Kenyon Drake.
Kenyon Drake did look good. He did. Looked good 2 weeks in a row, but he did, not enough volume.
Yeah, not enough volume, and that place, it's a carousel.
Yep, I'm with you. Kyren Williams is super fascinating. Like, I will be adding him right now because not only did the Rams...
I think I picked him up.
I mean, Shefty talked about this. Shefty talked about how much they just love Kyren Williams in L.A.
They do not love Cam Akers
they
anymore.
Do not.
They now love Kyren Williams.
You know what happens when Sean McVay loves a running back.
That's right.
He finds a guy.
It is a mercurial thing. Yeah.
So I would, if you have the opportunity, go grab yourself a Kyren Williams. Yeah. This one comes from Brandon, who wants to know, Christian Kirk or Michael Thomas rest of season? You know, Brandon, I think this is the answer.
Easy
is,
for me.
Yeah.
Christian Kirk.
The guy that we have any... Like,
the guy who is not in a question about his status every single... Michael Thomas not going to play this week. We don't even know when he's going to be back.
Yep.
And we've seen this movie before.
This is alarming because there was a thought that this will be the third game Michael Thomas has missed in a row. There was a thought that he would be back for this past Sunday's game. Now, all of a sudden, he's not even practicing still.
Nope.
They this makes you nervous. Shades of,
like I said,
years, right?
We've seen this movie before.
We have seen this movie before. It is not a fun one. So Christian Kirk, and by the way, Brandon, Christian Kirk has struggled recently. I get it. The volume has been way down. At least he's available, and availability is the best ability. Four Aces wants to know, Zeke or Hopkins this week at flex? This is a fun question. I'm glad we brought up DeAndre Hopkins. Funny, I'll start with you. What are your expectations from like a physical fitness standpoint for DeAndre Hopkins? It goes one of two ways.
He's ready. I can't wait to see him because I think he wants to put on a show.
Yeah, I think he either has the best game of his season by far or he has the worst game of his season by far. You know what I mean?
Like, I think he comes out of the gate blazing and like he's had time. Like, look at his Instagram. The guy's ready.
Yeah.
He's so ready.
I just mean like, you know, they're either like you're rusty or you're like,
no,
you're 6 weeks.
He's not
rested. Coming off of an injury though.
Yeah. I think you just, you know, people thought, well, maybe the absence from football, but if you think about DeAndre Hopkins and his career, he like never missed time. He missed practices, which was sometimes a contentious issue where he was before, but I always felt like he was somebody who knew how to manage himself really well, knew how to manage his workload, knew how to get himself ready for game day so that he could be that fast physical guy. He is going to beat you on the contested catch every time.
Yeah.
And now he's angry and in shape and well-rested DeAndre Hopkins. I love it.
And cherry on top, no Marshawn Lattimore.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will just take like 30 seconds to note how interesting this is. You know what? Let me save it for our pizza, Little Caesars pizza preview just in a moment here. Cause I want to talk about that just how the Cardinals wide receiver group takes shape with no Hollywood Brown.
Right.
Add Robbie Anderson, add DeAndre
Hopkins.
I can't
wait to hear it cause I would really like to know what Robbie Anderson's going to do.
Yeah.
Here.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I think he'll be frustrated and hope to prove some people wrong as well. McLaren F22 wants to know the better stash, Wandale Robinson or Jameson Williams. I'll go to you
question.
First again, Stefania.
Are you talking like dynasty or are you talking about for this year?
I'm assuming for this season.
Because if you're talking this season, it's Wandale Robinson. Yeah. You take the guy who's playing and here's the thing. Well, I love Jameson Williams. I love the talent. I love the speed. But what have we seen with guys coming off ACL? Like, if you haven't learned by now, like this is this, and I think Detroit, to their credit, really wants to protect him. Yeah. This is a huge investment for them. So I think it's Wandale Robinson.
What's the Lions record, Liz? They've played 5 games so far. They're,
I don't know.
1-4. 1-4. Yeah, not very good, right?
Yeah.
So let's say that 1-4 turns into, if they're, let's say Jameson Williams by week 10 or week 12 is ready to start practicing and the team is 3-8. You really going to rush him back on the field and play him a
ton? Well, the other side of that argument, though, is let's see what we got.
The good news is they have him under contract for 4 more years after this. I think it's a long-haul investment. I could be wrong, but I go on the Wanda Robinson
side. I would not be surprised if we didn't see him at all this season.
Interesting.
I think that would be the prudent thing to do.
We could, you know, there's, you can make the argument on both sides, which is sometimes if a guy's ready, you want them to dip their toe into playing just because it's an extension of the rehab process, but it's not to use him in the way you want for fantasy purposes.
How about, you know what else I could see?
Perfectly said.
Bring him back and let him practice for 3 weeks and not play.
Right. Like also not, possible.
Which we've seen on occasion. Guys will literally come back just to get some football in their life.
Right.
And even if they don't play a game. So we'll keep an eye on that one. But I think Wandell Robinson's the answer. This one comes from Garrett. In a league with your own Liz Loza, and we are forced to pick between Jimmy G and Russ, how do I pick? And there's got to be a story behind this question, Liz.
Well, you were actually the inspiration for this field. So when we did yesterday's show, you know, I was like, yes, I think you have to start Russell. And there's these 20 rushing yards he's cleared every week, even with the hamstring issue. And you were like, okay, but for who? And I was like, you know what, Field? I don't know for who, okay?
Yeah.
But I know it's bad. And you made a really good salient point that kind of had me thinking and gnawing at me. I co-manage this team with my friend Garrett Lerner.
Yep.
And he texted me last night, hey, what do we do with Russ? And I was like, well, if you're Field, nothing. I mean,
I don't know. He said,
how about Jimmy G? If you look at point projections and the spread, there's a pretty, I mean, it's not the highest total. It's actually under 50 because everything's down, but that's a whole other episode.
Right.
Regardless, Kansas City, you imagine a lot of points available. So I was like, okay, well, we know that Kansas City blitzes like crazy.
Yeah.
Right. And my assumption, this is why you have to do homework, everyone, was that Jimmy G, knowing his proclivity towards throwing picks, probably doesn't do particularly well when being blitzed. False. I have stats.
Okay.
Yards per attempt, number one, 10 yards per attempt when blitzed. Yards per completion, second, 14.2. Behind only who? Joe Burrow. What? Ooh. On target rate, second. Fantasy points per attempt, sixth and 10th when not blitzed. Jimmy G, I adjusted my rankings immediately. But I can't put him ahead of Russ.
Wow.
I am going to start him ahead of Russell Wilson. I am going to start him. I just feel like my rankings are also like advice to the rest of the world, not just my own personal advice.
Fair. Yeah. Yes. And the picks from last week, if you look at them, not his fault.
Nope.
That's a really tight one.
Debo,
it's a good example. I'm diving deep into this in Field Pass this week, but just here's an alarming stat to just sum up the state of quarterbacks this year.
No.
Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Matthew Stafford. Four guys who will all be in the Hall of Fame one day, right? Brady, the greatest player of all time. They have one game this season. One with at least 20 fantasy points.
One apiece?
No, combined.
Oh!
Future Hall of Famers through 6 weeks. 24 total games for those guys played.
Who has it?
Russell Wilson. He had one big game.
You're kidding me. Yeah,
27 fantasy points.
He has more than... Unbelievable. I wouldn't have thought that, actually.
I'm not asking for 30. I'm not asking for 25 even. No. 20 fantasy points. One combined. Josh Allen has 20 plus fantasy points in 13 straight games, just as an FYI. We're going to wrap things up here with Little Caesars Pizza Preview. And Little Caesars Preview is brought to you by Little Caesars. It's game day with Little Caesars, the official pizza sponsor of the NFL. Pizza. We begin on Thursday night, and I teased it just a moment ago. What does DeAndre Hopkins' role look like on Thursday? I want to note something. Last year, DeAndre Hopkins averaged 6.4 targets per game. That sounds like not very many. You are correct. The year prior to that, his first in Arizona, he averaged 10.0, exactly 10 per game. The year before that, a little over 10 per game. 10 per game was like a reasonable expectation for DeAndre Hopkins, or at least it was, until last season. Where's the volume at this week and weeks going forward? Beyond that, does he take over the Hollywood Brown role? Because if the Hollywood Brown role is what he's playing, 10 plus targets per game is a very, very much expected outcome. What does Robbie Anderson do on Thursday night? Does Robbie Anderson even play? Cliff Kingsbury hinted he will have a small package of plays, but I'm most focused in on what DeAndre Hopkins looks like, not just from a physical fitness standpoint, but also a utilization standpoint. Liz mentioned earlier, no Marshawn Lattimore. Could be a big night for D-Hop. On Sunday, in a week in which we need quarterbacks so badly, we have two coming back, at least most likely. Tua, we talked about him earlier, and Dak Prescott, who gets the matchup of all matchups. The Lions have allowed the second most fantasy points per game to opposing quarterbacks this season. They have the NFL's worst total defense in terms of points per game allowed. Pretty much everybody they have faced has steamrolled them offensively. I wonder if The next player to do so will be Dak Prescott. Also means good things for guys like Michael Gallup and perhaps Dalton Schultz if he plays on Sunday, still battling that knee injury. And then Monday night, the Bears are looking for their first road win of the season. Liz's Bears, they play right up here in New England where they play the Patriots. And, you know, I kept talking about how all these quarterback options are bad. You know who's played well the past couple of weeks? Bailey Zappi. I'm not going as far as saying that I'm benching Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or one of these guys who are future Hall of Famers for Bailey Zappi. But I got to be honest with you, the kid has me curious, and I don't know if Mac Jones will play or not on Monday night. Doesn't sound like he will, but Bailey Zappi has been rock solid, and it's benefited some Patriots pass catchers as well. Maybe not one guy other than Jacoby Myers that you are absolutely confident you have to play, but the passing offense looks pretty solid right now. The Patriots 3-3 against the Bears 2-4 on Monday night. You want to stick around till Monday and hang out with us and then go watch the Bears game?
No.
No,
okay. You want to get back to your kids.
She's going back to California. Yeah. You know who's jealous?
You.
Me.
And me, to be honest.
I would love to hang out with you. We just don't need to watch the Bears.
Okay. Fair enough. Looking forward to Thursday's show already. We'll have a Thursday night preview of the Arizona Cardinals hosting the New Orleans Saints with Mike and Daniel. In the meantime, history made the two of you trailblazers and absolute legends in so many ways. What an honor to be with you guys today.
Hope
you
enjoyed it. For our eventful day.
Someone had to be a part of it, but I felt great to be the third wheel here. Fantasy Focus is back tomorrow for Liz and Stefania. I'm Field. They are the Queens.
Queens,
yeah.
All right.
Lunch on me? What does that mean? What else? Anything else you guys need?
I think so.
She's got a smile that'll melt your heart. She's always there to lend a helping hand. Her fantasy knowledge is just the start. Her skills are highly in demand. She's our Bay Area lady out there hustling for us. With advice that we really trust. Bay Area lady, always there to help. She's not a cone, she's your favorite gal. She's Stefania Bell.